have expanded tremendously. You know, think some companies have a all-in sustaining costs of 1750 and 1850, and gold is at 3900. These are incredible margins. So the margins have gone up, and as your margins have expanded, so too have your cash flow. Well, if your cash flow has expanded, your price to cash flow metric, if your cash flow is expanding faster than the price of gold is going up, your price to cash flow metric is going down. It's difficult to chase some of these things, but you look at a company like Fortuna, that I've mentioned before. Mm-hmm. Oh, I've got to do the Canadian, sorry. On Bloomberg, you don't get the metrics when you look at the US. So let's just see what this is trading at today. It's trading at 6x cash flow. That's a company that has 3 different operating mines. It has a very good pipeline. It has an extremely solid balance sheet, disciplined management, low costs, etc., etc., and is trading at 6x cash flow.
Adrian Day Asset Management. Good afternoon or good evening to you, my friend. Really good,
evening,
good to see you.
Andy. Good to thank you for having me back.
Oh, anytime. You're one of my mentors from afar, as I call it, and somebody I'd like to spend time with. So let's get into it. Gold has been ripping, and it's been ripping really since, I want to say, a good 10 months here, but or 11 months, but more recently, it's been ripping since really August, since the summer lulls here. What's your sense on that? What are you seeing? Why is it ripping? And does this have more legs on it?
Okay, 2 parts to the question. Why is it ripping? You know, I think it's a continuation for the, in the main, it's just a continuation of what we've seen for the last couple of years, frankly. Central banks are still buying, as you know, they wax and wane a little bit, but over the last 3 years, it's been pretty steady buying, but you know, 1 month, 2 months, there'll be a bit of a pullback. We've had the central banks come back in. We've got Chinese non-official buying, which has been the second most important thing for the last year and a half. It wasn't there in 2022 and 2023, but for the last year and a half, Chinese non-official buying has been very strong. Last week they had a holiday, so today they're back, and maybe that's part of a buying. And I think just generally the concerns about the fiscal issue in the US and elsewhere is obviously a big demand. And also just the underlying issue that the US dollar is losing. I'm not saying it's losing its status as a reserve currency. It is losing its status as the sole reserve currency. As we move to this bipolar world that many people have talked about, we could well have 2 reserve currencies in the world. And so to the extent that, and so how does that evidence itself? Well, it evidences itself, first of all, in the US dollar not being, having less share of global trade outside of the US. So when Saudi Arabia sells oil to China, it's no longer conducted in the dollar. When Brazil buys stuff from Russia, it's no longer conducted in the US dollar. So to the extent that the US loses its being used less in global trade outside of the US. And equally, of course, everybody knows it's being a percentage of central bank reserves is going down and has been going down consistently for a long time. That's a point I've made over and over, but this is not a short-term trend that just started at the beginning of this year. This has been going on for a quarter of a century, basically, but nothing has happened recently has changed the desire of central banks to reduce the dollar in their reserves. And so to the extent that the dollar loses its status as the sole reserve currency, something has to replace it. And it's not the Saudi Arabia, gosh, whatever they use. I should
Yeah,
know.
The dinar or something. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, yes. Dinar probably. Dinar. And it's not the Russian ruble and it's not the Brazilian real. The thing that's replacing it, primarily, not exclusively, but primarily, is gold.
That's huge news, too. That's a huge point.
Yeah, central banks know it, but so increasingly do investors. They're seeing this and recognizing it. And I think that's where you're getting the bid. Anyway, long answer, I'm sorry. But I think to a large extent, it's really a continuation of these trends. Now, as I say, things ebb and flow. The Chinese National People's Bank of China stopped buying gold for about 4 months at the end of last year to the beginning of this year. You'll see different central banks buy and sell depending on, frankly, their own circumstances at the time. Remember, the central banks, if you look at everything I've said, maybe other than the Chinese non-official, but if you look at those buyers, people concerned about the fiscal situation, people recognizing that the dollar is losing its status as a supreme or sole reserve currency, and central banks wanting to diversify, which we've talked about before in the face of a weaponization of the dollar. None of those things is very price. People are not buying. If those are your motives, you're not buying based on price. And so the Polish Central Bank, for example, will step up its dollar, will step up its gold buying and its reserves when it has the money to do so. Not when it thinks, this is a pretty good time to buy gold. This is a great price. I think it's going up next week. And so that's an important point. This buying is not dependent upon the price at any given moment. It's dependent upon other circumstances, mostly availability of money to buy. And is that going to continue? I know we want to get into like the stocks, are the stocks overvalued and so on, but I see little reason to think that buying of gold is not going to continue for some time, because the drivers, the reason that people are buying, excuse me, it's not going to go away. At least I don't think it's going to go away.
So this still has a lot of legs left, you think?
I think so.
Next question. We talked about central bank buying, the big players buying. Do you see the retail, because you deal a lot with retail investors, for them coming to invest their money, retail investors coming to invest their money. Do you see retail more money flowing into the sector now?
Look, we've got to differentiate between gold and gold stocks.
Right.
Or we've got to differentiate between specifically physical gold, which is what we've been talking about, and gold as an investment.
Right.
So if we're looking at gold as investment, it's interesting. We're certainly seeing more interest. We're certainly seeing more interest in the last month than we have for the rest of this year. And before. So we're definitely seeing a shift in interest. We're seeing it in our asset management, for example. We're getting a lot more queries and we're getting new accounts open. If you talk to coin dealers, whereas 3 months ago, let's say, we're so busy, we've never been busier, but 3/4 of the people calling us are selling, not buying. That shifted a little bit. But it's still no overwhelming rush that you would expect at these prices after gold has done what it's done. It's not what we saw in 2011. It's not what we saw in 2006, 7, or 1996. And the clearest evidence of that, Andy, is if you look at a GDX. A GDX, as you know, is the largest gold mining ETF out there. And that's an instrument, that's a vehicle that I would say an awful lot, if not the most, the majority of what I'll call ordinary investors who aren't gold investors, and ordinary investment advisors and financial planners who aren't gold investors, when they want to put some of their clients' money into gold, they go to the GDX. Some will go to Newmont, some will go to Barrick because they're the largest, but an awful lot of them will just go to the GDX, right?
Mm-hmm.
And what's happened to the flows? You can see this. This is published. This isn't anecdotal. The GDX, in the last month, right, the last 4 weeks, the GDX has seen outflows.
That's astonishing.
Outflows of $681 million.
That is astonishing.
And that adds to the outflows we've been seeing pretty much all year of $3.75 billion. Just to put that in context, at the beginning of the year, at the beginning of this period, the GDX was only a $12 billion fund. $3.75 billion has flown out of the GDX. Which,
have you ever seen that?
It's astonishing. It's
it is astonishing.
And so the people that I'm getting, right, and the people that I don't know the extent, I can't talk specifically about the fund that I manage. You know, I've managed Euro Pacific Fund for Peter Schiff, but I can say we're getting inflows. These are people that are, to some degree or another, gold believers, right? So Peter Schiff sends him an email saying, this is a great time to buy. You got to buy. Look at my fund. And they're already preconditioned to buy. The people that are calling me, some of them have been on my list for years. Some of them not. They said, I met you at a conference, you know, last month, or I saw you on Andy's webinar.
That's what they all say.
But yeah, they're people who are interested in gold to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
The ordinary everyday retail investor, it would appear, is simply not looking, and if anything, they're using this as an excuse to take money out.
Okay, that is astonishing to me, and it's fascinating because it really shows that there's still, I don't want to call it negativity, but there's a lot of doubt or the wall of worry in the market, right?
I you know what I think? I wouldn't describe it as negativity or a wall of worry. I think these people simply don't care. I don't think the dentist in Oklahoma has called his investment advisor at Schwab and said, hey, what do you think? Let's have a discussion. Should we buy some gold? And they go backwards and forwards and decide not to buy it.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're just not interested. They're just not looking at it. And that to me is the most bullish contraindicator that you could possibly have.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it begs the question that at some point they will be interested, because maybe right, for the rest of eternity, they will never be interested.
Right.
But assuming that at some point they will, that's the most bullish. I mean, to be not interested is more negative than to be negative.
Okay, so I'm going to talk to my viewers and listeners here, and I know you're all tuning in to listen to Adrian, but what Adrian just said, I wasn't aware of. You actually touched on that, Adrian, our last conversation, and then it's even more. But to all my viewers and listeners, I would say, as Adrian just pointed out, that is the number one indicator is complacency. And that's what you're seeing right now in GDX, correct?
You put it so much more eloquently and succinctly than I did. Yes, it's complacency, and it's complacency because the S&P is going up month after month. And again, to use the dentist in Oklahoma, who may be a very smart.
Hey, Adrian, I lost you here.
Yeah, he's not looking at the Buffett indicator. He's not looking at the Hindenburg omens or all these other weird and wonderful indicators. He's simply looking at his statement that's coming in the mail or the email. And every month the value of his account is going up. So he, this is my theory, but it makes sense. He's not looking anywhere else. So I think until there's two things here. One is until the stock market starts to show signs of deterioration. That doesn't have to be a crash or anything. But until that happens, I don't think the mass of people are going to turn away from the S&P that has served them so well and switch over to gold.
No, I think that's a great answer and a great theory, actually. That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. Now, let's not forget, we talked earlier about central banks, non-official, you know, Chinese buying. We talked about wealthy families concerned about fiscal issues and so on and so forth. Most North Americans don't buy for those reasons. Most North Americans do not turn to gold as an insurance, as a savings. You know, we don't have that history here, but say they do in France and Germany and Italy, where gold has and other countries, where gold has actually saved their families' wealth and enabled people to live through hard times. So in most people in North America look at it primarily as an investment. And if you're looking at gold as an investment, you turn to gold when the economic environment is conducive to gold, namely when the economy is slowing, when the central bank is cutting interest rates, when inflation is high and rising, and when the dollar is falling. And other than the dollar falling, the narrative on the economy has been completely the opposite of what I've just described. Mm-hmm. The narrative for the past year has been of describing an economic environment where you don't, I won't say you don't need gold, let's say you don't want gold as an investment. I think it's wrong. I think the narrative was wrong, and obviously it would have been a good time. But the economic environment is not the traditional economic environment where the normal American turns to gold. Mm-hmm. And so that will change, I think, as I say, you know, you start seeing the economy slowing, interest rates come down meaningfully, the dollar falling, and most importantly of all, for a typical investor, will be inflation clearly moving up, then people will start to turn towards gold. And the S&P rolling over will be, as it were, the icing on the cake.
Yeah. Let's talk about gold stocks. I'd love to get into that. And just full, this is not investment advice. And I have no idea what you've done in the fund and with the people, the things that you manage. But I took a lot off the table here just recently, and I've been doing it in an averaged out basis. But we've had such a run up. And just to all my viewers and listeners, I still own a lot, so it's not like I'm cashed out or anything. And it's even not like I'm trying to time the market. I'm trying to be disciplined, just to be very candid. But that being said, the gold stocks have runs really since the beginning of the year. And when you and I started doing this, started talking, it's been 2 or 3 years ago, gold stocks couldn't even catch a bid. And boy, did they, especially in the last, I would say the last eight, well, really since August. So what are your thoughts on, when's the time to sell, taking money off the table? Is that a prudent thing? And are you still seeing some value? And then if you don't mind, you can certainly drop a few names of if you do see value out there, if you feel comfortable doing that.
Yeah, no, always. Well, I'll take the question in two parts apart from the names. I'll take the question, your main question, in two parts. One is, do I think this is, you know, do I think this is the end of a bull market? Are we, I've heard people say we're at the, how many innings in baseball? Eight?
Nine innings, yeah.
Nine, okay. I've heard people say we're at the eighth or ninth innings. I'll answer that, and then I'll look at what should an individual be doing. Do I think we're at the end of this market or anywhere close to the end of this market? Absolutely, absolutely no. Couldn't be further from the end. And you know, we've just described the flows from the GDX. I've never known a gold market end without public participation. Mm-hmm. Doesn't mean it can't happen. And as I said, maybe for the rest of eternity, that dentist in Oklahoma is never going to buy another gold stock in his life. Maybe. But we're not seeing the public participation. We are not seeing the anecdotal signs of a mania. You know, when I go to get a coffee, the barista is not giving me his latest gold stock tip. The Uber driver is not giving me his stock tips. When you go to a dinner party, everybody's not sitting around the table talking about gold. There is no sign of a mania. And yet you go back to 2007, everybody was buying a second home or talking about how you go back to 2001, everyone was giving you a tip on the latest .com that they had just discovered. Mm-hmm. We don't have those signs of a mania. So I think, and then the third part I'll say, and it comes to part of your question, is the value. These stocks are simply not overvalued. Long bull markets end at overvaluation. And yet, and I'll just give the example that I normally give of Agnico. It's the third largest gold mining company in the world. And it's a company that has no particular issues about it. So people don't look at it and say, oh yeah, you picked Agnico, but, you know, as they would with Barrick. Oh, well, you picked Barrick, but they're in Pakistan. Of course they're cheap. Nobody can say that about Agnico. You look at Agnico, the price to free cash flow today is slightly higher, no, is higher than it was at the end of the year. But it is lower than it was at the end of 23, 22, 21, and 20. So than the end of, other than December of 24, it is trading at a lower price to cash flow than it has for the last 5 years. And indeed, Andy, you could go back 40 years, 45 years, the entire history of the company, and it has rarely traded at a lower price to cash flow. So the reason for that is because the costs in the last 2 years, the costs have not been going up as much as the price, right? Mm-hmm. Then everything is getting revalued and becoming more valuable. Your mine is more valuable. Your reserves are more valuable. Yours have expanded tremendously. You know, think some companies have a all-in sustaining costs of $1,750 and $1,850, and gold is at $3,900. These are incredible margins. So the margins have gone up, and as your margins have expanded, so too of your cash flow. Well, if your cash flow is expanded, your price to cash flow metric, if your cash flow is expanding faster than the price of gold is going up, your price to cash flow metric is going down. So for all of those reasons that I just said, and I think this is the message that to me is the most important message, we're nowhere near the top of this market now. No. And so for all of those reasons that I've mentioned and more, we're nowhere near the top of this market. Now, does that mean we couldn't see a correction or a meaningful correction? Obviously not. And I would say that every bull, I talked to Rick Rule about this actually just on Saturday, every bull market I've ever known has had a meaningful mid-cycle correction. The most clear one, of course, is in the 1970s, when from 74 to 75, gold actually fell 50% from almost $200 to just over $100, right? And it washed out a lot of people who thought that was all they were going to see. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, it went on to 850. But we had the same similar thing in 2006. We had a three-month pullback when gold fell like 35%. So the gold stock, fell 35%. Andy. It's been a busy day. Gold fell 35% in 2006. The gold stocks, I don't have it in front of me, but they obviously fell a lot more. So will we see that again? There's no reason to think we won't. Could it happen soon? I think it could happen soon. We're beginning to get those little signs. Mm-hmm. Those little signs. the number of placements that has come out, the number of companies that are raising money in the last 2 weeks has shot up. I've never seen anything like this, the number of deals that are coming across the transom. And they're all being successful.
Yeah.
What does that mean? If you're not getting new investors coming into the space, but Ajax is able to raise money, it means that investor is selling something else to raise money for Ajax. Mm-hmm. So that's an indication. We're seeing more and more M&A. Now, we're nowhere near the sort of craziness that we saw in 2011. When people just overpaid for marginal assets. We haven't seen that yet. I would argue that most of the M&A that we've seen this year has actually been, you know, good M&A. I might not agree with all of it, but none of it's been crazy. I might think sometimes they overpaid a little bit, or wouldn't it have been nice if they'd have done it 3 months ago? But again, none of it's been crazy. But still, you're getting a huge input in that. And the other indicator, I'll tell you, a lot of investors are now calling and asking me to be fully invested. Why are you holding any cash? Fully invested. And again, as a contrarian, that's a worrying sign. So could we see a confluence of factors? Maybe we have peace in Gaza. Maybe, well, at some point, the U.S. government will end the shutdown. And I don't honestly think either of those two things has a huge price in the market. I don't think gold shot up on either of those two things. But if you end those, and maybe at the same time as you end those, China decides, the People's Bank of China decides to pause their buying of gold for a reason, or the Polish Central Bank, which has been the largest buyer of gold this year, incidentally, you know, maybe things in Ukraine go differently and they decide they need more money for building, you know, drones rather than adding to reserves. Whatever the reasons, you could easily see a confluence of these factors at the same time that will cause gold to have a bit of a pullback and with it the gold stocks. Sorry, long-winded answer. So we now come... So I definitely think in cricketing terms, maybe the first and second batsmen have played their part and they're now in the pavilion, but we're only at the third and fourth batsmen, and we go up to 11, by the way. So we're very, very close to the beginning. Now, could one of those two batsmen get, you know, bowled out for a duck because, you know, of what I just said, Gaza and so on? Of course. But we're very, very close to the beginning. So in terms of clients, I don't mind telling you what I'm doing. I can't tell you for the fund, by the way. I'm not allowed to tell you what we're doing in the fund. But for clients, you know, if I've got a conservative client who told me 2 years ago that he kind of liked gold, I kind of like gold, and that's why I've come to you, but I'm 80 years old and I'm conservative. And we put 20% of his money into gold stocks, and that's now representing 40% or 35% of his account. And he's pretty much got 50 to 100% in every stock we bought, and probably that's illegal under the SEC rules. So some of our stocks have gone down, incidentally. We're taking some of that profit. Now, if every gold stock you have has gone up 50 to 100%, which it has for most people.
Me.
And you sell 30% of your gold stocks, you've still got exactly the same amount of money invested in the market.
Right.
So for that kind of client, it makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
But am I getting worried? Am I getting nervous? For people who are dedicated gold accounts, who I know have 10 or 15% of their overall portfolio allocated to gold, and I'm managing that gold part, am I liquidating? No, not by a long chalk, not by a long way.
Got it. So no, that's a great answer.
Helps to give. But I mean, it does make sense, especially if you're a conservative investor, if you're of limited means, if you're older, if you're not a dedicated gold investor. It just makes sense to reduce the
Your
amount of
exposure.
money you have after
Yeah.
these run-ups.
Yeah.
Yeah, but again, I mean, there's so much value in this market. I mentioned Agnico, and you look at Agnico, it's gone up whatever it is, 80% this year, and you think, oh my gosh, I'm not going to chase that. But I just described how it is,
It's
it's still
cheaper.
good value. And
Yeah.
if gold goes to 5,000, I've said this to you before, to the extent that the SEC allows me to guarantee anything, which they don't allow me to guarantee the future, but to the extent they allow me to guarantee it, I will guarantee you that if gold goes to 5,000, Agnico stock will go up.
Yeah.
That's an easy
Yeah.
one. And then you look at some of these juniors that are still very, very cheap.
Well, let's talk about them. Where are you finding value, or where do you still see a lot of value in the junior market? And I know you write some big checks, but yeah,
Yeah.
well, I mean, where are you finding some value, or are you still
Well, I
seeing
think
value?
some of the intermediate sort of growth stories are still good value. You look at a company like, again, it's difficult to chase some of these things, but you look at a company like Fortuna, that I've mentioned before. Oh, I've got to do the Canadian, sorry. On Bloomberg, you don't get the metrics when you look at the US. So let's just see what this is trading at today. It's trading at 6x cash flow. That's a company that has three different operating mines. It has a very good pipeline. It has an extremely solid balance sheet, disciplined management, low costs, etc., etc. And is trading at 6x cash flow. I mean, in any normal market, that would be considered inexpensive. And that's just an example. Now, if what I've just described happens and we get a pullback, of course, Fortuna's going to pull back along with everything else. So we're looking at stocks like that, and just some of the juniors, some of the exploration companies. I mean, I've mentioned Midland before. People are a bit frustrated with Midland because the stock is down from where it was a year and 2 years ago. But I would say that they've got good management, good technical management. They've got great balance sheet. They've got a spread of alliances and joint ventures plus 100% own ground with really good partners, whether it's alliances or options, good partners that include BHP, Rio Tinto, Barrick, Agnico, SOQUEM, Osisko, Agnico. So they have really good
They have great
partners.
partners. Yeah.
They're in Quebec. I would just say that they're well positioned for success. Now, if you're an exploration company, including a prospect generator, you've still got to have the big discovery, right? You've
Right.
still got to have success, make the discovery. But I would say that they are as well positioned for success as any company I could think of. But there's a couple of places I'm looking right now, and this might be of interest. There's a couple of places as I'm looking for good opportunities given what's happened here, given how everything's run out. One would be when a company, and please understand, you've got to have done the homework and like the company to begin with, but you're just holding back because of a price. So you have a company, let's just say a good example would be Discovery earlier this year, Discovery Silver, or Orla last month. Companies that you think are maybe just a little bit overvalued, they've just gone a little bit too far too fast. And then a big strategic shareholder decides to sell their shares. In the case of Orla last month, we had Agnico sell their shares. Well, we had Newmont sell their shares and Agnico sell their shares. Not because they didn't like the company, but as Amar Aljandi at Agnico put it, we invest in juniors because we might be buying one of the projects, not because we've got an investment fund and think the stock price is going up. So when they sold, Agnico sold first, and then Newmont just sold in the market in an overnight offering. The stock fell like 15%. If you're watching that company, you can get a great opportunity to buy when something like that happens. Because obviously, if you do an overnight offering at a discount to the market, what do you think happens in the morning? The stock price goes down.
Right.
So that's a good example. Another example will be companies that have struggled and had problems for one reason or another, and the stock price, you know, has really lagged. But then there's a catalyst or that suggests that there might be a change. So an examples of that in the last few months will be Equinox, you know, where Greenstone ramp up really had problems. They had to raise more money more often than they said they were going to. So the balance sheet wasn't so strong. The ramp up was going slowly. And most importantly of all, investors were kind of ticked off because the promises weren't being met. Then the new CEO came in when they did the merger with Calibre, and they took Darren from Calibre, well-respected, well-regarded. And now you've had a quarter where they've started to improve the operations, and people can say, okay, looking ahead, if they get the operation sorted out and they've got the Valentine mine just started and already done a gold pour, at the new Valentine mine, wow, then we're going to see some cash flow. Then they're going to be able to pay down their debt. Suddenly this turns from being a dog and, you know, excuse me, Ross, from being a problem, let's say, to, wow, this could be one of the darlings of the next gold cycle, and it's still cheap. B2, you know, which had the overruns of Goose Bay and extensions, but now they've declared commercial production at Goose Bay. Again, that could be the catalyst to get an undervalued company, but a company we followed, we like the management, we like the balance sheet, just had problems. And now that's the catalyst that says, okay, maybe that's the time to jump in. I don't have one to look at for the future. But I think your listeners get the kind of idea I'm talking about.
Yeah.
And then the third thing, frankly, will be new companies. When a new company comes to market, it might be an RTO or it might be a new listing. It could be a private company that goes public. The smart managers, management teams, the smart ones, do not try to milk the market for every single cent that they can when they go public and leave nothing for the new investors behind. But instead, they come out at a reasonable price. Obviously, everybody wants to get as much money on their listing as they can, but you come out at a reasonable price so that the people that bought in that pre-IPO round, they come out with a little bit of a profit and are supporters. And the people that buy you in the first week or two or three are buying at a reasonable price. And you can get good opportunities there. And one I'll mention, for example, it's not public yet, but well, I'll mention two. Shouldn't really do this because I want to buy them when they come out at the right price. But one would be Summit Royalties, run by Drew Clark, you know, who used to be the you know, he used to source the royalties of Metalla. So Drew's come out with this thing called Summit. I suspect by the end of this month or early November, that will be public. The price that he's looking at is not a stretch price at all. So that will be a one to look at. And of course, it all depends on what price it comes out and how the trading starts and everything else. The other one would be a company called Evolve Royalties, which is run by Joseph De La Platte and Vince Metcalf, who were, you know, behind Nomad.
Mm-hmm.
Nomad Royalties that got taken out by Sandstorm. They're doing an RTO with a company called Voyager, but Voyager's halted now. So before everybody rushes off to
Can't buy them.
buy Voyager, you can't buy it. But that should be out probably within 10 days. And again, depending on the price, but both Joe De La Platte and Drew Clark have said that the price they're looking at, they want to come out at a reasonable price so that people come in and make some money. And it makes sense for a company, incidentally. They're not doing it out of the goodness of their hearts. But if you come out at the maximum price you possibly can come out at, what typically happens is the stock price drops in the first week or
Right.
two. And if the stock price of a new listing drops right out of the gate, it makes people who had it in the private placement say, "Oh my gosh, my 25 cent stock came out at a dollar. Now it's 70. I better get out of this pig before it goes any lower." And all it does is get, selling begets more selling.
Right.
So it's the most sensible strategy out to make sure there's room for the stock to go up. So anyway, those are two ideas. And if while we're talking, I think of an example of the second one, the laggard that maybe has a catalyst. Of course, you never know when a catalyst is going to happen. Yeah,
Right.
because I didn't know Darren Hall was going to take over Equinox.
Yeah, they happen all the time, so you just got to really pay attention here.
Yeah, but the key I would say is you've got to like the company. There's no point saying, "Oh, Newmont sold their private shares in X. I'm going to buy that." You
Right.
you've got to make sure you like the company to begin with.
Yeah. Like the company, good management, good asset, have a good asset to great asset, it being in a good to great jurisdiction, really. Adrian, I see lightning flashing here. You probably need to get out of here. People want to do business with you. How do they do that? And how can they open up an account with you?
Yeah, well, if they want to do business with me, all I can say is that you have very, very intelligent listeners, Andy. Sorry, that's okay. So the website is adrianday.com. So you can go there and find out basic information, or if you prefer just to talk to someone right away, 410-224-2037.
Got it. I'll put all of this in the show notes. Adrian, you're a friend. Yeah, I love to enjoy spending time with you. I always get great insights and I love to pick your brain. I'd love to have you on again real soon as this market's ripping.
I'd love to because these are my favorite interviews, Andy. You do a great job.
Thank you, my friend. Have a good night and we'll see you soon.
Okay. Good night.